Hello, 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 everybody. Welcome back to Passions Podcast. I'm your regular host, Latara, here again with the wonderful, fabulous Gina. Hello.
Hello. Happy to be back. I was so excited when I got your email. I was like, obviously.
No, you know, welcome back. I got so many like good comments and messages about your appearance. I was like, okay, I'm definitely gonna, and I enjoyed having you on. Like, we had a good time talking about it.
I definitely
have to have Gina back. Oh, I mean, listen, there's some people that we can just talk about it and it doesn't get boring and you don't realize how much time has passed. I'm very bad about just yep. I do need somebody who can steer me sometimes, you know.
I'm the wrong person for that. I'm like, yeah, where else could we take this tangent?
Right. Same. So we're getting started again. Lord Jesus, we are in episodes, 411? No, yes, 416 through 420, right? Oh my goodness. What a roller coaster. These episodes, the magic stuff, that's where we're going to start today. The magic stuff was the, like, really the bread and butter this week. It was just the most interesting thing.
You know, I hate Charity and Miguel. So this was a feat for me.
It's so much. They're both so much this week, but mm-hmm. I love it. I mean, don't you like having Charity in hell though?
Most of my notes are like, take her already. Please.
That's what I was saying last week. Just let her die. But all right. So let's pick up in magic. Charity is in the flames and she's surviving in hell. And Hecuba is talking to Tabitha about how Charity won't die. And Tabitha's like, yeah, bitch, I told you it's impossible to kill her. And Hecuba refuses to admit defeat. Meanwhile, Father Lonegan, whom, by the way, has not been around. He just showed back up and I'm glad to see him. And he does a lot this week. Like, he really like goes full John Wick, which I liked. I don't know, like blind priest superhero.
He was. And also I felt like he really wasn't alarmed enough by like the things Kay was confessing to him. He was like, oh, that's troubling to me.
Nobody was alarmed enough in these episodes for me, except for Miguel. Miguel was the only person who was like, at the level of intensity I feel like you need to be at for what is going on in this house.
Monica.
Everybody else seemed a little too calm. So Father Lonegan is telling Kay, confess your sins. Tell me what happened. They're in Charity's room, by the way. They're still upstairs in Charity's room. Tell me what happened. It's never too late to make a confession. God will forgive you if you speak from the heart. And then Kay says, but I don't have a heart. I have no heart, Father. I lost it when I sold my soul. And then she begs for his help. And this was interesting to me. I was like, so she doesn't have a heart? Like, the soul is one thing. How does she not have a heart? That's new information.
I also feel like I was confused because to me, if somebody's soulless, right, her soul got taken from her, she was too concerned with what was going on for someone who didn't have a soul. Like, K number one with her soul was more evil than this K without a soul.
Yes. Well, and that was something we talked about on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, I think, where what's the rule? I thought that because like when Kay lost her soul, she couldn't feel the holiday spirit. She couldn't get into the Christmas spirit. She felt nothing. Right. So they basically told us, oh, Kay doesn't have a soul. So she doesn't have any emotions, but she is showing plenty of emotions here.
And conflict with someone without, I know soulless people, they don't have conflict like that.
Yeah. I feel like if you sell your soul, basically it turns you into like a sociopath, right? Like, oh, well, I don't care. And maybe you do some masking to pretend like you care, but that's not what she's doing. She really seems to be conflicted, like you said, about sending her cousin to hell. I sent my cousin to hell. Oh, okay.
And so, like the back and forth, like, should I do something to help? Should I not do something to help? Like, girl, you don't care. You want your man, like, let her burn.
Right. Burn, baby, burn. Yeah. Let her burn. She's so conflicted. And it's like they're trying to give Kay a soul, even though they had her sell it to Hecuba.
Yeah.
So Kay is conflicted, but she does tell Father Lonegan how she came to sell her soul. She recounts the whole thing, and I'm not gonna tell y'all what it is, because you all should know by now like how she did this and what happened and why she did it. So she explains the whole thing to Father Lonegan, and like Gina just said, he did not seem concerned enough. Like, he wasn't shocked enough by this news that this—
oh, that's pretty troubling.
Yeah, that this 15-year-old girl like sold her soul to get some dick, and in return she had to hand over her cousin to the flames of hell. I mean, I feel like I would be a little bit like, wow, that's— at least give her some admonishment. Like, this is very, very bad, Kay. Right. You know, like, bad Kay. Bad girl.
What we don't do, maybe.
Yeah, and he does. He seems very calm, almost like he knew. Which I guess maybe he gleaned it already, because he was calling her soulless creature, which, by the way, that's what I'm going to start calling her. Last week, he was like, she was in the room with him, but he couldn't see her. And he was like, show yourself, soulless creature. Tell me who you are, soulless creature. Kay, the soulless creature.
I kind of love Father Lonegan.
I like him right now. I like him in these episodes.
Yeah.
And I like him sometimes, and sometimes I'm like, do something, you know? Yeah. But this time he did some stuff. He did a lot.
He was quite active.
He did a lot these episodes. So she explains, and Father Lonegan tells her that this sounds like the work of a witch that used to live here 300 years ago. Her name was Hecuba. And Kay's like, my witch's name is Hecuba. Could it possibly be the same one? How many women do you know named Hecuba? How many witches do you know named Hecuba? Right.
How many witches do you know at all, let alone with the same name?
Right. And he's like, well, it's possible. Witches can't die. I loved this because I've been wondering about this. I love that they have now explained this. Witches can't die unless exorcised by a priest. I've never heard this kind of lore before, but I'm into the fact that they at least gave us some kind of rule.
Yeah.
Why these witches are still alive, even though Hecuba's been trapped underground, presumably with no food for 300 years, you know?
I also feel like they give rules for things, and then, like, we're going to come back in 200 episodes, there will be, like, a completely different rule. So.
Yeah, they make rules to break rules. That's what they do. They do. But I like it when they give us a rule so that I can bring it up later when they break the rule.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. So yeah, she asks him how she can get her soul back. She says, how can you help me? Can you help me? Please, I need my soul back. I just want my soul back. And he tells her to repent of her sins by getting Miguel to help Charity and bringing the vial with her soul in it to him. And he says, you have to make a full confession to, like, your friends or whatever. How does he expect her to get the vial from Hecuba? Like, the confession part is easy.
Right. Tell the truth. Fight bad with good, Kay. You know?
Yeah. But how's she supposed to get her soul from an all-powerful witch?
Right. I mean, you can't get rid of her. Has this little girl gonna fight her off?
Right. Like, if I could have taken my soul back, I would have done that by now.
Right.
So
I would imagine, like, once she has possession of the vial, it really wouldn't matter what she does after that anyway.
Right. She could probably just drink that stuff or whatever, you know, sniff it, snort it. It is in one of those vials that people, like, keep cocaine in, you know?
Carry it around like Sarah Michelle Gellar in Cruel Intentions.
Cruel Intentions, yes. Yes. And she just snorts up her soul, a little bit of her soul, a little at a time, you know, just in case.
You don't want to OD on soul.
Exactly. Because Eve can't bring you back from that. Eve can't do shit, and we'll get to that too.
I can't even with that, honestly. The notes I have for that, I'm like, I can't even believe this is, like, a real thing that I'm writing.
Eve can't do shit, but let's stick to this real quick. Okay. So, he tells her she has to make a full confession and get the vial or whatever, but Hecuba immediately appears in the room just as they're about to go downstairs. Like, she's about to go down and do what he says, but Hecuba comes in, and this is where we have the longest back and forth. This goes on for like three episodes of Father Lonegan being like the good angel on Kay's shoulder and Hecuba being like the demon on Kay's shoulder. And Hecuba saying, well, if you tell, you'll never get your soul back. If you help Charity, you're never going to get your soul back. And Father Lonegan saying, don't believe her. She's lying to you. Just go do what I asked you to do.
We ain't getting it back anyway.
Right. Right. It's like, you're not going to get it back anyway, because you know she hasn't given it to you by now. She's not going to give it to you. Especially a little bit later, Hecuba just flat out says it to her. And she still seems to have some kind of trepidation about well, I get it. She doesn't want her friends to know that she sold her soul to get Miguel and
imagine
to send
having
Charity
to explain
to
that. Imagine the most embarrassing thing you ever had to tell your friends as a teenager, and then imagine having to tell them this.
It would be tough. It would be tough. But I mean, I probably would leave a couple of things out, like the Miguel part. Like, I would just say I was tricked into selling my soul. Yeah. And Charity got caught up in that, and now she's in hell. That's where she is. Like, that's what I would have done by now. You know what I mean?
I liked the beginning, kind of like the chemistry between Father Lonegan and Hecuba. And then it just, like you said, got drawn out so much. Like, I like them playing back and forth with, like, when she came in and, you know, he tried to throw the holy water on her and stuff like that. And then it just, like, by episode three, I was like, oh my gosh, enough.
Yeah. Yeah. At first she comes in and she says, time for a showdown, Padre. I think that's exactly what she says. And then he goes for his holy water and she zaps him with lightning. And yeah, it's really exciting at first. You think they're going to really go toe to toe, especially since last week. It just took like a little bit. Father Lonegan was throwing holy water inside of Charity's room and it started to rain holy water inside of Tabitha's house on Hecuba and Tabitha. Like, it only takes a little bit and he's right so close to her, he could vanquish her, you would think, considering how powerful it was when she wasn't even in the room before.
Right.
But now all of a sudden he can't get to his holy water. She zaps him, whatever. But then he takes his crucifix and he like holds it up against her and says, you know, I don't know, goodness powers prevail. That's another thing. They always say goodness powers. It's never like God, Jesus. Goodness powers. Okay.
You know what's so funny? I was thinking about this when I was watching it. I think it was the last episode last night, that it's like, obviously a religious person wrote this, but it's almost like religious satire. So it's like confusing to me.
Yes.
I'm like, wait, were they like making fun of it? Or like, I can't get a read on it. I really can't figure it out.
I can't either. Cause it seems like a person, I think it's probably people who grew up in Christianity, because I don't even think it's Catholicism, because they seem to know very little about Catholicism, but like, who grew up Christian, but like their parents never really went to church. Right. You know what I mean? Like, y'all went,
like, they whatever
went
to you church, imagine it would be.
They went to church on Easter and Christmas, and they did, like, you know, two or three other things in the year, but they didn't really ever go to church, and so they don't really know like Christianity. I don't know. It's like, so interesting to me the way it's written.
It's brought into it so much that you're like, oh, they must be religious people, and then it's so ridiculous that you're like, this has to be satire. Like,
yeah, spoof.
Right,
this is a spoof. Like, this is ridiculous. But they go toe to toe. They go back and forth over Kay for a very, 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 very long time. It's very annoying, but eventually Kay agrees to stick to her deal with Hecuba to stay.
She's scared enough. She got her
to stick it out with Hecuba for, I mean, okay. It's so silly. It's so ridiculous. But I mean, Kay doesn't have a soul. She really, really wants her soul back. Hecuba's dangling it in front of her, saying that she's,
again, I go back to, if you didn't have a soul, would you care that you didn't have a soul?
Right.
They lost me on this one. They really did.
I think maybe she feels like she can't get Miguel unless she has a soul, maybe.
Because she's like, because Shari's so good and that's what he likes about her. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. So she's like, I need my soul back if I want to get Miguel, maybe. I don't know. It is a paradox.
Yeah.
It is a paradox. The passion's paradox.
It's a flawed plan, I would say. But
so one of 100 flawed plans in this show. Seriously. She sticks it out with Hecuba, and Hecuba says, evil beats goodness. I am the new queen of mean.
Oh my gosh, I wrote that down too.
I loved it. But downstairs, the kids, Miguel, Simone, Jessica, and Reese have come back from looking for Charity, and Miguel thinks he hears somebody screaming from the computer in the living room. I mean, it's so silly. It's just so silly. They keep doing these movie references. We've done The Birds. We've done Psycho. We did The Exorcist last week, and now we're doing Poltergeist. And they keep doing these like cult horror movie, classic horror movie. Carrie.
It's spoofy.
We did Carrie too. Yeah, it is really a spoof. It's ridiculous. Oh, it's so ridiculous, but they take it so seriously.
Miguel was not playing.
No, he was like, I hear something in someone screaming out for help in the computer. Don't you hear that? So they go over to the computer and he's like, is that you, Charity? Just like yelling into the screen. Is that you, Charity? And there's all of this static inside the computer screen, just like in Poltergeist on the TV, you know, because whatever. I saw Poltergeist like one time when I was like 8 years old and I had my eyes closed for the majority of it because it was scary. So I only know, I understand the reference, but I don't even remember. I guess it was ghosts inside of the TV. I don't remember.
Demons, ghosts, I think, yeah.
I don't know. Write to me and tell me. Y'all tell me the plot of Poltergeist.
Please.
So Miguel's yelling into the computer and then it just starts to shake. Everything's shaking. And Charity starts yelling out. I hate to even use the word yelling because she's going, Miguel, save me. Miguel, please save me. Save me.
I need to know if they said, like, told her to play it like that. I need to know what they told her. Like, here's your motivation in this storyline.
It was so unbelievably flat for a person who's burning in the eternal flames of hell.
And grating. Like, yeah. I know you can't control what your voice sounds like. I know people think my voice is annoying. I get it. I've had people on TikTok be like, your voice is so annoying.
Rude.
And they're probably not wrong.
However, I think they're wrong. I disagree.
Thank you so much. But that voice and just the same phrases over and over again. Kay, who knows, Miguel, save me. I'm going. Goodbye. Like, goodbye. Go. Goodbye.
She says, they won't let me go. They won't let me go. Only you can save me, Miguel. You know what? I think it probably was a choice because I do remember now that I'm doing this voice and I'm like imitating her. It does remind me of the voice in Poltergeist where there is somebody going, don't walk into the light. There's danger in the light. It does kind of sound like what Charity's doing.
She's brilliant. Okay. Maybe.
Well, maybe they did. I mean, maybe you were absolutely right. And they told her to play it that way, you know, but it is, I didn't care for it. Because she's in, supposedly in agony. Demon,
I would be putting tape over her mouth. I would be done.
She's supposedly in agony. If I were that demon, I'd be like, we're not torturing her enough.
Literally, though.
Break out the hot pokers and pitchforks. We're not torturing her enough. You know?
She could still get out this many words.
Yeah, right.
Enough down here.
Yeah. So they hear her in the computer. Miguel works out that maybe Charity's in the closet because he works out there were scorch marks in the closet. She was talking about there was hellfire in the closet. So maybe that's where she is because they're all trying to figure out where Charity is. And they've all basically I think at this point, they've all basically come to the conclusion that she is not in this world anymore. Like she's, so, I think Reese says something about her being somewhere in between, which is also a Poltergeist thing. So she's somewhere in between worlds. And so he starts to go up the stairs, and that's when Father Lonergan and Kay come down the stairs. Mm-hmm. And Kay has decided that she's not going to tell anybody. And Father Lonergan is like, I'm not going to tell anybody either, because you have to release me from the bonds of confessional. What was it? Like confessional.
Because, like, she said it to him, I guess, in like
confidence. Like, yeah. Confessional confidence or something. Confidentiality.
I think that goes out the window, though. Like, first of all, you're a priest. You're not a psychologist. Second of all, I think that goes out the window if it's like going to prevent someone dying, even if you were a psychologist.
100%. Like, patient confidentiality and privilege. Yes. When this person may harm themselves or others, then you can, you are a mandated reporter. You're mandated to report. And I'm pretty sure it works like that for a priest. And like, you're just a priest. Like, it's not whatever. I'm whatever. But he says he can't say anything. So he doesn't say anything about Charity being in hell. And again, sir, you are a priest and the only adult here.
Correct.
You're the grown up.
Adults on this show are complicit in everything that goes
yes.
on.
Yes. Come on. Father Lonergan. So they come downstairs and he's like whispering to Kay, you must tell them the truth. No, man, you must tell them the truth. You could do it.
Be the adult.
Be a grown up. Do your job. Nobody in this town is good at their jobs. Everybody's so bad at them. So including Hecuba. Father Lonergan.
Hecuba's good at her job. That's about it.
Hecuba's good at her job. And you know what? Hecuba works hard too. Hecuba.
She does.
The devil works hard, but Hecuba works harder. Okay.
She makes Tabitha look like child's play.
She does. To Tabitha's credit, though, she hasn't had her powers at all for like 350 yeah. episodes.
She's doing the best she can with what she has.
They took her powers in like episode 70, and she hasn't gotten them back except for that one time when she fought that bear on Fuck Mountain. And then she immediately lost them again.
I don't really remember that. But I believe
it was when Miguel died.
When Timmy was like buried, right?
Yeah, the avalanche ones. Yeah. So, where was I? Oh, Father Lonergan doing nothing.
Yeah.
Standing there being complicit, like you said.
But that's okay because Charity, once Kay's around, basically rats on her and was like, she knows where I am.
Okay. Why wouldn't Charity just say, I'm in hell? Why is she just going? She keeps going, ask Kay. Kay knows where I am. Ask Kay. Bitch, just tell us. Okay. Damn.
Where are you?
Just tell us.
Use your words. We're right here. You're talking.
I'm in hell. Use the portal in my closet.
No.
Bing, bang, boom.
Or I'd be like, Kay, push me into the closet. Like, let it all out.
Look. Kay, she's saying this, but Kay continues to maintain that she has no clue where Charity is. She's like,
Simone's on to her, though. Simone's like, bitch, I know you know where she is.
Yeah, Simone pulls her to the side and is like, you know where Charity is, don't you? And Kay fakes it. She's like, no, I don't. Then Miguel gets pissed, and he like turns around like, Kay, you've been my best friend since elementary school or since like pre-K, and we tell each other everything, and you have to tell me. I'll die without Charity. You have to tell me where she is. Tell me now. And she still does not do, she does not say anything. And then the phone rings. Everybody's just piling on Kay, which I mean they should be because she is doing something horrible. But Grace calls from her deathbed.
Wait, but was that before? Did Sam call her first, though, right? To be like, yeah, your baby brother's dead. And your mom almost died, too.
Yeah, well, yeah, Sam's the one. Sam's the one who calls. Sam's the one who calls and interrupts this. But Grace wanted him to call. She wanted to talk to Kay. She woke up and said, I need to talk to Kay. I need to warn her and to that she can save the family. She's the only one who can save the family or some shit.
And she's telling her, like, you're the only one that's strong enough. You'll be able to do, like, girl, you don't know that you can feel evil. You can't feel how evil your daughter is. I'm confused.
Yeah, it's interesting because Sam calls and tells Kay that Grace is in the hospital, that they lost the baby. And then everybody has this moment of like grieving for the lost unborn child. Okay, of course. And then Grace gets on the phone and talks to Kay and says, you have to stop the evil and do not let it destroy our family. Oh, I mean, Kay, everybody's from all sides. Just do the right thing now, hun, at this point. And Hecuba has basically said, you're not getting your soul back. Just do the right thing. Right. But she's just too embarrassed, like you said.
And like, if everyone's going to be gone, what good is your soul going to be anyway?
It's funny though, because
you're going to be with a soul alone. That sounds sad also.
But I think she's like, I'd rather fucking die
than tell these people what I did.
Yeah. And I get it, man. Like, I get it to a certain extent. Like, I have had some very embarrassing moments, and there's one thing, I'm not going to tell any of you this right now, but there's one thing that has happened to me in my life that is literally the most embarrassing thing that has ever happened to anybody. And
I'm dying to know, but
and I'm told to ask. Just know it involves a Walmart. And
I'm intrigued.
It involves a Walmart and a self-checkout. But I've told exactly one person about this in my life, and I will take it to my fucking grave. Okay. I can't imagine having to tell people.
Right.
It's like, you have to tell people this, or I don't
death
know,
to you, everyone.
Yeah. I mean, if those are the stakes, I mean, I would think about it though.
It would take a minute.
It would take some thought. It would take some.
Because
some
now doing. They're all going to live and remember what you told them.
Yes. Okay.
A lot at stake.
So much, too much. The stakes are too high for Kay. And she's like, nah, I'd rather fucking die. I'd rather we all die in this house. Before I tell y'all I sent my cousin to hell for some dick that I'm never going to get.
And it's like, she has... Everybody on this show has such blinders, like, for only whatever the object of their affection is. Like, anybody on the outside, it's like they don't even exist. Like, I was thinking about it, like, all this stuff going on. Like, is Miguel even really part of his family? He's literally never with his family.
Ever.
Ever.
Go home. Go home.
When
Miguel.
They bring up him as, like, a member of that family, like, when Ethan's like, oh, yeah, do you think, like, Miguel or Luis could have done this. Like, Miguel's never at home. How would you find your fucking letter?
Right. Right.
It's crazy.
Miguel is always at these people's house. And I think I've said this before, but my mama would not go for that. Like, bring your ass home. Like, you cannot be at other people's house, like at that specific house all the time, because they will think that I abuse you. Like, please come home. you know, but Miguel's like obsessed with this girl. I've said it a bunch of times. She is not worth the trouble, but Miguel's not worth the trouble either. I don't like him.
This is a theme throughout this show though. Like, Chad obsessing over Whitney. I'm like, Ethan and Teresa. I mean, the only people that I'm like, okay, yeah, I kind of get why they're obsessed with each other. Like, in theory, Luis and Sheridan are both very likable people.
Yes.
I get it. They're boring when something's not happening, but like, oh yeah, like I could see why you are so focused on that human. They seem like a good human. The rest of you are so flat, except for my girl, Teresa. She is multidimensional.
I love Teresa, but that's why I feel like she should not be so obsessed with Ethan. He is not worth her time or her troubles. No. Like, and Miguel, Charity's not worth the trouble. Like, cause this is a lot of trouble. Like, this is a lot of trouble. Yeah. Okay. This is like,
I'm not getting involved with hell for someone. That's right. Like, I got to draw the line somewhere.
This is mortal danger we're talking about. She's not worth it. Miguel
she almost tried to kill you how many times? Like, where's the good parts here?
And Miguel's not worth me giving up, like, my Subway card. Like, he's not worth... He's not worth any. I can't see.
He's not worth giving up your Blockbuster card, and Blockbuster doesn't even exist anymore.
I'm too nostalgic for it. I need to keep my card in. I'm even if I can't use it, it is priceless to me. Okay.
Memorabilia.
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. So we're off on a tangent. Back to this hell house. Okay. Everybody, after this phone call, Miguel hears a sound in the kitchen. He's like, it must be Charity. It must be Charity. And so he runs into the kitchen. And I think it was Hecuba who made some kind of noise in the kitchen and then threw her voice down into the basement. She was like, Miguel, help me. She was pretending to be Charity. Miguel. Yeah,
she essentially was like, oh, if we can get Kay to really like commit full throttle, then we'll just get rid of him so she doesn't have a choice to help Charity anyway.
Exactly. She has no choice. If she has no choice, then there's no problem. So let's just eliminate the problem. So then she traps all of the kids except for Kay in the basement and then makes the walls start to close in on them. Okay, girl. Like, I loved it. I was like, this is some of the best special effects we've seen. It wasn't great, but for this show,
I just wrote spare Simone. The rest of them could have went for all I cared.
I was shocked that Simone even went down into the basement, to be frank, to be honest. I was like,
I almost feel like Simone's like maybe would have been better friends with Jessica.
Yeah. Oh, I feel like Simone should just have other friends outside of all these, like, because Jessica's super fucking boring. Mm-hmm. And Kay's evil and has slapped her and been really nasty to her. And you know what? Be friends with Teresa. She should be friends with Teresa.
I could see them being friends, but I feel like that could be dangerous and troublesome.
Yeah, no, Teresa needs Whitney for sure. As annoying as Whitney is, Teresa needs her to, like,
it's the yin and yang.
Temper
things.
Gotta temper that crazy for sure. Yeah. Actually, so Father Lonergan at one point starts praying for help. And while he's in the living room with Kay by himself, it's just the two of them. He starts praying for help. And that stupid fucking angel appears. I can't stand. I think I hate her the most.
Angel girl, really?
Listen.
I mean, I love her, but
she is so pointless and useless and has just always shows up to tell people she can't help. It irritates me.
Like, just here to tell you you're in trouble.
It's her fault that Grace lost the baby. It is her fault. She put all of this shit in Grace's mind at the party. And then Grace went off and fell down the stairs. She stressed Grace the fuck out. Grace probably was carried before that.
I think it comes down to it being Gwen and Rebecca's fault. But I also hate them. So
I hate them too, but that angel did not have to put that kind of stress on Grace. Grace didn't even know what was going on at that party. She was having the time of her life going through Ivy's shit in Ivy's room. And then that angel appeared to her and was like, hey, Grace, by the way, you should really actually be very, very upset because something really horrible is happening downstairs. And it involves Sam's son. Like,
and she's like, Noah.
Grace was having the time of her life. She was going through Ivy's like shit in her room. She was like talking to Pilar. Pilar had her sequestered. Everything was fine until the angel showed up. And I maintain that. And you're right. It is Rebecca and Gwen's fault for putting those things in motion. But that fucking angel, she stressed Grace out when Grace didn't. She knew Grace didn't need that stress. She knew Grace was having a rough pregnancy.
But stress her out like, not on a flight of stairs. Not close to a flight of stairs.
Jeez, I can't. But this ain't. So this time, let me tell you what this stupid angel did this time. So she shows up after Father Lonergan prays for help. And you think, oh my goodness, help is coming. Help has arrived. The cavalry. No, she shows up And she says, Kay, you need to tell the truth. And then she does nothing else. And then she says, I've done all I can do here, and disappears. That's what happened. She says, Kay, you have to tell the truth.
Yeah, but she got rid of the demons that were on them, didn't she? Or how did they get into the kitchen? Something she did, like, because I remember Hecuba and what's-her-face and Tabitha were like,
no, she only did, I'm going to tell you the one thing she did. So here's, because the demons haven't come up yet. The demons are about to come up. Because after that happens, then the shadow monsters, Hecuba traps the kids in the basement. Then those shadow monsters appear in the living room. The lights go out, and then Kay and Father Lonegan start to fight those demons off.
Right.
And she's like fucked off outside. She's like talking to Hecuba and Tabitha outside at this point. And Kay manages to escape the demons and like run outside, and she asks Hecuba for help. And then they kind of just like watch on. The angel is like, because the Hecuba's like, see, I've won, ha ha ha. The angel helps Father Lonegan by moving a piece of furniture because he couldn't see, and he was like trying to get to the kitchen to find the basement, and he was trapped. And so she moves a piece of furniture. Big whoop. She didn't do anything. Father Lonegan was throwing holy water left and right, beating up beating up the demons.
Getting How's out- that when he's like, they're in trouble. We have to get to them downstairs. Like, dude, you're in the middle of like, you have a demon on your back. How are you getting downstairs? You can't even help yourself right now. How are you helping anybody else?
He did it though. He got all those demons off of him. He got that demon off his back. Kay got because one of the demons like had her in a chokehold at one point. Mm-hmm. I think he actually saved her from that demon. And that's how she actually ended up going outside and being able to escape. And she went outside.
She saw what was going on in that basement, and her sister's down there, her best friend's down there. What is the only thing she says?
Miguel.
I hate them all.
Miguel. She has the nerve, audacity, and the gumption to ask Hecuba for help. What makes you think Hecuba did this? Why would she stop it?
Right.
What? And she's like, you told me that I could have Miguel. And Hecuba laughs and is like, ha, 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 you believe that? Like,
I mean,
and you believed me? You're so stupid is what she basically says to her. And so Kay then just like looks through the basement window and sees these people, her brother. We haven't seen her brother. Her brother didn't come. It's been two Christmases in a row we haven't seen Noah.
You blame him for not coming home?
I don't. I really don't.
I would stay away from them too.
I really don't. But so she looks down there and she sees these people, the people that she loves in her life down in this basement about to die. And then the angel reappears again and tells Kay she must tell Miguel the whole truth and to tell her she can't do anything. Oh, and again, she says, I can't do anything. She says that to Kay again. Like, that's my issue. Why show up then?
Yeah.
I already know what I need to do. Unless you can help, please leave me alone. Please go away.
Did you just think like, she is a figure that will like make people want to do the right thing more? I don't know.
It was funny because the angel reappears. She tells Kay, you must tell Miguel the whole truth, which Miguel's being smushed in between two walls. What's the point at this point? Like, if I tell him, are the walls gonna magically push back out? Like, what? You know, explain.
Rickety ass table, like you thought that they put in the middle, like this will hold it off for a little while. That thing looked like I could have put a fist through it.
There's a whole ass window above them. Why not?
I wrote move that down the table? Too. I said, there's a window ?
Why not move the table, break the wind, get stand up on the table, break the window, and get out?
They're all tiny. They'd fit.
That it wasn't even a small window. I could have fit through it. Seriously.
Throw yourself through it.
Yeah. But no, they all just stand in them. They try to push the walls. You know, Anyway, the angel shows back up, says she can't help. Hecuba calls her an ineffectual angel girl, which I agree, Hecuba. She's like, ha ha ha, this ineffectual angel girl can't do anything for you. Right, correct, she can't.
And I love Tabitha and Timmy, like, just hiding in the bushes. Also, all the, like, publicity for the Hidden Passions book, I can't.
I am so over it. I am so over this.
Have you ever read it?
Yeah, like, well, I have it. And for the Patreon, we were, like, doing a little book club. And I haven't finished it, but I had to put the book club on hiatus just because I didn't have the time to, like, commit to it.
It's, like, a little X-rated.
There's yeah, no, it's got, it's okay. Got, like, some sex scenes in it. Like, Sam and Grace, not Sam and Grace, Sam and Ivy sex stuff, and yeah, it's got it, and I didn't even, I think I made it to, like, chapter 15 or something, so I'm not even, I didn't make it all the way through the book, but yeah, the drugs, quaaludes, it is, yes, it's a lot, but yeah, I'm tired of the commercials. It's been a lot for, like, every episode. For like several weeks now.
Yeah, it goes about on this, for a little while.
About this book, and it's funny, but it's also like, okay, I get it. I got it. I think if I watched the show the way it was intended to be watched, one day at a time,
yeah,
then it wouldn't be so annoying. But because I watched 10 episodes in the last like 48 hours.
I don't know how.
So
honestly,
so it's like, let's move on, what's next, what's happening. I don't want to talk about this book, you know, but they are funny, and I love the comedic relief. I do like it, because you do need it, because there's a lot, it really is a lot of heaviness. It's as silly as the walls closing in and the computer shaking and the hellfire, as silly as all that is, it is also very like heavy subject matter when you think about it. So it is nice to have some kind of like
silliness,
goofiness. But anyway, Kay goes back inside after getting the fuck you from Hecuba. Hecuba's like, no, bitch, I can't. I'm not going to help you do anything. Goes back inside and try and save everyone. And Father Lonergan starts to pray, and he prays the chains off of the basement door. So the door opens. He swings it open. He yells down to the kids, children, pray. And the kids start to say the Lord's Prayer. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And, or is that what they say?
I think it was our Father. That's
our Father. Yeah.
This has to be satire.
Our Father,
like, crazy. Yeah,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. And then the walls open back up. They run up the stairs and they are saved. And then Kay finally agrees to tell Miguel the truth. She finally agrees when Father Lonergan asks her again. He says, you gotta tell the truth. She's like, okay, I'll tell them. And that's like where we end it with them this week, right?
Yeah.
It was a lot, but I enjoyed it. I mean,
you know what? If you have to watch Charity and Miguel content, at least they weren't together, like oozing over each other, which is probably nice.
And we actually don't even see Charity. She's just in hell, you know, burning up. She's just burning up. So it was actually kind of nice not to have to see her. All right. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to say shout outs to my patrons over on Patreon. Let's see. Thank you to Muna Shea, Marcus, Erica, Brelin, Lisa, Zach, Sid, Sarana, Dustin, Heather, Randall, Ashley, Shannon, Hannah, Camelia, Amanda, Monique, Samantha, Amy, Jeanette, Eric, and Jamie. Thank you all so very, very much for being patrons and helping me keep this show up and running. Every little bit helps, and I really, really appreciate it. If anybody out there listening would also like to become a patron, go on over to patreon.com/passionspodcast and sign up for whatever tier is agreeable to you. All right. So we're going to keep moving on. Before we go on, Gina, do you have anything you want to talk about? Like any projects, your TikToks?
Sure. You can go follow me on TikTok. It's There G Goes. And that's it. My other social media is boring, so just follow me on TikTok.
Did you hear? Oh, is that your phone?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was like, I thought it was my computer. Oh, no. I was like, oh,
Charity's
no.
Here.
What are you doing, computer? Starts shaking. Da-da-da-da-da.
I get this to like shut up. Okay. That should be good now.
Okay. Right. So I will link that in the description of this episode and definitely, definitely, definitely go follow Gina. She's got some fun content, some nostalgic content that I love to see when it pops up for sure. So we're gonna move on. Let's talk about these troubled marriages, Ethan's all paternity, right. Teresa. This is all kind of melded together this week.
I know. So, I was like jumping around. I'm like, I don't know where this note goes actually.
I know. So I think let's pick up with Rebecca and Julian first, because they don't have a lot. And yeah. I just thought it was hilarious. So after all the craziness of this night, Julian is in his office having a drink, as he does. You know, he's an alcoholic. So he's having a drink and Rebecca finds him, tracks him down. Now, remember last week, Julian was like trying to get away from Rebecca, kind of. He was like, I don't really want to talk. I don't want to talk about this. He's been hurt. Okay. He's grieving the loss of his son. He really is.
I never thought I'd feel bad for him, but I really did feel bad for him.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Rebecca and Gwen are just so opportunistic to the point. It's like, ugh. Yeah. Like, disgusting.
They are hideous. I can't stand them. And Rebecca especially. This was absurd. And it went in a different... It went in a different direction than I thought it was going to go, to be honest. But I shouldn't have been surprised, because Julian is despicable. Like when we all boil it all down, he and Rebecca do deserve each other. So Rebecca tracks him down and she tells him, she walks into his office and tells him, I've just gotten off the phone with my attorney. And she says, now that you're available, I'm going to divorce my husband. Lady, I just got the most earth-shattering news right. of my life. I have no interest in talking to you about getting married. I'm still married to the woman I'm married. Like, I still right. have one woman to get rid of right now. You know, and he says that to her. He says, would you, she says that, he goes, would you like a glass of brandy? Like, he just offers her a drink. He does not respond to what she said at all.
But I'm also confused because she's already married to a rich man. Why do you need this rich man?
Right. Why do you? Because she, I think it's because she loves drama. I really think it's because she loves drama.
She will.
I think she has first. Okay. I think there's a number of things happening. I think her husband is rich, but he's not as rich as Julian rich. Yeah. Or as powerful as Julian, the Cranes. I think that she has a lot of animosity towards Ivy because she was like, this was talked about a few weeks ago in passing. She was poised to marry Julian, or like she was had her sights set on Julian, and then Ivy just married him and they were like best friends apparently. That was something they said. I don't know,
that's in the book if you go read Hidden Passions.
I just haven't gotten that far, but yeah. So I think she wanted to get back at Ivy. I think there's a lot of those types of things going on with her, whereas like she doesn't really care about the money yeah. as much as she cares about the drama, yeah, and being vindictive. And yeah, So she tells Julian, she has just called her attorney at midnight or whatever time it is, saying she wants to divorce her husband. And then he tells her, I think you're jumping the gun a little bit. I'm still married to Ivy. And she's like, well, she won't be your wife for much longer, surely. And she says, you two are just married in name only. So what's the big deal? What's the big deal? And then she starts to kind of cozy up to him, flirt with him more, be more sexual. And I really did not think this was going to work. I didn't. Because Julian, again, just got the most earth-shattering news.
They're all so gross.
Yeah, but it kind of works. She says something about, I want to fulfill your every need as a man, and I'm the only woman who can fulfill your needs. And he starts to like muse about Ivy being out on the streets, mm-hmm. and saying maybe Ivy will have to go work for Grace Bennett in her knick-knack shop, I think is what he said, calls it, or something like that. Like her, I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was something demeaning about Grace's little shop. Right. And then they laugh about this, about Ivy's coming misfortune that they think she's gonna have. And but Ivy, don't count Ivy out just yet, right?
I mean, because she's another one that's a narcissist. So she's gonna.
Oh my gosh, she's such a narcissist. She's such a narcissist. So they laugh about this. Julian says, you know, I think you're just what I need. And Rebecca says, Julian hadn't even thought about this. Rebecca says, now that Ethan is no longer actually a crane, surely Alistair is going to reinstate you as his primary heir. And that right. like perks him up. And he's like, you know, I think you're just what I need. And then he lays down on her lap and starts just goes to sleep. And she revels in her triumph. I think she thinks she's won. She's got a long way to go, though. She's got a long road ahead of her.
I mean, she definitely did something. She did a lot of things.
Yeah, she's awful. She really is awful. But that's all that really happens with them. But I think it's kind of important to talk about how, but especially since I gave Julian so much credit last week. I really did. And I'm taking a lot of it back right now. Because I really just was like, really, Julian, right now, this is your thought process. This is what's important to you.
He's so out of touch that it just doesn't even shock me, really.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Ethan is talking to Teresa, and he says he vows to find out who else knew about him being Sam Bennett's son before tonight. He's getting more and more worked up about other people all knowing this and having kept it from him, which is understandable. He also is having like the most ridiculous identity crisis. I mean, okay, your last name isn't Crane, but that doesn't mean that every accomplishment that you ever accomplished in your life wasn't you, and you don't know who you, I don't know who I am. He keeps saying, I don't know who I am.
I'm not a Crane. I'm not a Bennett. I'm no one. Like,
it's okay, pathetic. Mama. It's pathetic. No, it's pathetic to have wrapped up your identity so much in just your last name that when you find out it's not actually your last name, you no longer have any clue who you are, what you like. Like you randomly got amnesia or something. He is pathetic, and I cannot stand him at all.
I feel bad for him because they made, like, as a family, made so much of his identity about who he was going to be and taking over for the family and all this stuff, that I guess now it's like if somebody took whatever your job has been away for the past however many years and said, like, okay, what are you now? You know what I mean?
Unemployed, but I'm still Latara. Damn, you know? Shit. Actually, probably happier. I'm probably happier.
Getting paid to stay at home now for a little while.
Yeah, I'm on unemployment and I'm happy as a clam. Latara, that's me.
Period.
Like, I'm going to sit around. I'm going to paint. I'm going to get high. I'm going to, like, you know, I'm going to make some music. Like, chilling. I know myself.
Be whatever you want to be now.
You can be who you want to be. Ethan, this is such an opportunity for Ethan, too, to just, like, and I think that's where they're trying to go with this, that Ethan is going to really.
He was so much different from them, like, forever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's been saying, sometimes I feel like I'm not even really a part of this family. Well, now you're not.
Yeah. Be careful what you wish for.
You've been saying it. You already felt it. So you do know who you are. Not a part of this family. Like, oh, he's so annoying. But I do, don't get me wrong, I know I've been railing against Ethan. I do feel bad for him. I have sympathy for him. I understand that this is like a very hurtful, and
his mom sucks and his dad sucks. So like, yes, you know what? It's a wonder he's not worse than what he is.
That's so true. That's so true. I know it's upsetting for him. I know it is. It just irritates me that this man is in his mid-20s and he's like, I don't know who I am or what I like because my last name's no longer Crane.
Right.
What?
But this, I guess he probably feels like too, like he really doesn't like Sam. So it's like, he really doesn't even have a last name. It's like Ethan, period.
Ethan, you know, I have a cousin who doesn't have a last name because her parents couldn't agree on what her last name should be. So her last name is technically her middle name. She doesn't have either family name. Isn't that crazy?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, just choose a name. It's not a big deal.
They were like fighting over like what her name would be.
Yeah.
They were like, okay, we just won't use either one.
And then they just never did it. It's one of those things that it went on for so long that eventually they just never got back around to it. And yeah, she doesn't have either family's last name. She just has her first name and her middle name, and that's it.
That's wild.
Yeah. But exactly, what
to do that.
Exactly. But also, what's in a name? You know what I mean? Right. She's still a person, you know, a full-fledged human person with feelings and emotions. Just because she doesn't have our last name or their last name, it's like, she is who she is and she's still related to us, you know.
Yeah,
I know she's my cousin.
That's wild though. So,
it is wild.
Very interesting.
It is, you know, my family's interesting.
That power struggle. I like that. That's the exact word. Neither of them were like, nope, I'm right.
And she's like 19 now. Like, she's grown.
I mean, I suppose if she wanted, she could go pick a name now.
She could pick a name. Yeah, she could pick a name. All right. So let's go on. So Ethan is vowing that he's going to get to the bottom of this. Yeah. So he and Teresa decide to go to the hospital, but it's not explained exactly why. Like, did he go? I don't think he went to the hospital to talk to Sam. I don't know why they went.
Mom was there.
But how? Ivy snuck out to go to the hospital. So I don't know how he knew that Ivy was there, but that's who he ends up talking to at the hospital. So let's talk about what's going on at the hospital. Everybody ends up at this hospital. And Grace, poor Grace has lost the will to live, everybody. It's very sad, kind of. I mean, we've done this before. They did this with Teresa, where nothing was wrong with her. And not that there's nothing wrong with Grace. There is something wrong with Grace, but Eve says there's nothing medically wrong that we can fix. There's nothing I can do for her. She just has given up. Poor Grace is dying of a broken heart is what Eve says. Cause Eve's a bad doctor. She just doesn't know what to do. Right. Like, she just,
only you could save her. Good luck.
Yeah. Only you, Sam, the power of your love can bring her back is what we decide on. Grace, we find out that Grace does lose the baby, which is very sad. Everybody's really upset about it. And so Grace finds out that she has lost the baby, and she gets really upset because she's awake for a little bit. She gets really upset and she says, I want to die. I have nothing to live for.
Like, ma'am, you have three other children.
Three other children and a niece who has already lost her mother.
Correct. And who is smoking hot husband? I'm sorry. Like, one.
Yes. Not to mention, Charity is like deeply disturbed. Like, she needs you.
Yeah.
Needs you. I have nothing to live for now. Listen, I do not want to downplay the loss of a child because I am certain that, like, especially like a miscarriage, I'm certain it is very, very upsetting. Deeply
also
disturbing.
Like, learning that your husband had this other child that you didn't know about, like, I'm sure.
Right. It's a lot. I totally understand that. But saying I have nothing to live for anymore, it's a little extra.
No.
It's a little, especially when you have three children. I mean, I guess because she didn't do any raising of these children. These kids have run amok. I mean, Noah's off to God knows where. Kay has sold her soul and sent her cousin to hell. Jessica, we barely ever see Jessica, but bless her heart. She's not bothering anybody. She's just out here, but being unparented. They never know where she is, you know? So you already got kids that you don't even take care of. So maybe those people are the people you need to live for. You have that to live for.
Yeah. You got some work to do.
Yeah, you got a lot of work to do, but maybe that's why she was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Just take me. And opportunistic Ivy, I can't, like, is Grace gonna die? Eve, like, bitch, you wish. You wish.
The way Ivy showed up to this hospital and then just stuck around, even though Sam kept telling her to leave. And then when she sees that Sam, so Eve tells Sam, there's nothing I can do for her anymore. It's up to you. Ivy like looks through the curtains and watches on as he tells Grace that she can't die. That
she need her.
I need you. Our family needs you. Our girls need you. Everybody, you are a light in everyone's lives. And he kisses her. He's crying. He's hugging her. Ivy turns back around and says to Pilar, Sam just found out that Ethan is his son and all he can talk about is Grace. The fuck? What is he supposed to? What?
She's certifiable.
She really is. You know who she's exactly like? You know who else would do that?
Teresa.
Teresa would do that. So that would be something that Teresa would do and say. 100%. They are so much alike. So much alike. And I mean, Teresa basically did do this when Sheridan was dead and Luis was cradling her dead body. And Teresa takes the moment to make it about her and Ethan. And it's like, see, isn't it? It's so hard to lose someone you love. Girl.
Like, some thoughts can stay in your head. Like, that girl has intrusive thoughts and acts on every single one of them. Ivy is the same exact way.
Yep, they're so much alike. I wish they could just be friends. Oh, I wish they could just, like, they could really dominate harmony together. 100%. If they just, they join could just forces. Join forces.
If they were like the Rebecca and Gwen of the other.
Yes, side. Like if they got together to go toe-to-toe with Rebecca and Gwen, amazing. Oh, I would have loved that.
I want to rewrite that story.
Me too. We should do that. when we got the time. But yeah, I was watching on. She tells Pilar, you know, he just found out Ethan is his son, but all he can talk about is how much he loves Grace. And Pilar sets her straight. She says, did you really think that Sam would sit by his dying wife's side and talk about you and Ethan?
Dumbass.
She's so awful. She really is so awful. And then she says, I really thought, this is crazy. This is crazy. She's like, I really thought that once he knew the truth, he would come back to me and we would be a family with me, him, and Ethan. Like, 25 years later?
Because you have a kid? Like, he has 3 kids with this lady. Like, what are you talking about?
Exactly. And y'all don't even have a kid. Like, they have children, minors. Correct. You have a grown man that you kept from him for 25 years. Like, it's not the same. Why would he come running back to you?
I felt bad, though. There was the part where Sam was saying, I don't want Ethan if it means losing my wife and my baby boy. And, like, Ethan walked in on that. Like, yeah. He's a grown man, but that's still very hurtful.
Yeah, it was really rough. So let's pick up with them. That's a good transition. Ethan and Teresa show up to the hospital for whatever reason, but they do. And they get there. And like you said, Ethan walks in on a conversation between Sam and Ivy, where Sam is once again telling her she needs to leave. And right. She's like, but what about our son? Like, no, not now is not the time. Like, give me, it's been an hour, like, since I found out. Give me some time and some space. Delusional, yes, fully and completely.
Yeah.
And like you said, he says, because she says, what about Ethan, is what she says to him.
Right.
And he says, I don't want
Ethan, some other concerns right now.
If it's at the expense of my wife and my baby son, my newborn son or unborn son. And Ethan does step in and says, he says, you know, I feel very sorry for what's going on between you and your family right now, but I don't want to be your son any more than you want me to be your son. And Sam walks away from the conversation because it's too much for him. And I get it. It's a lot. He's going through a lot right now. Sam Bennett. Ivy. So then Ethan talks to Ivy. This conversation was sad, but it was so interesting because Ethan says almost verbatim all the same things Sam said to her last week. Mm-hmm. He says to her, because she says, I know you hate me. And he says, I don't hate you. I could never hate you. You're my mother. But I don't understand why you kept this from me and kept me from my real father all this time. And I don't think that you understand what it is that you have done. I don't know who I am anymore. I'm not a Crane. I'm not a Bennett. I'm nobody. And which is, again, a little excessive. You do know who you are. You should know who you are by this age. Beyond a name.
Like when he said to her that she basically used him to spite Julian and Alistair at like his expense.
That's exactly what Sam said to her last week.
Yeah.
She says they have almost the exact conversation. And it was actually really cool writing because, you know, they're just trying to show us how much like Sam
they're alike.
Ethan actually is. And she says, you know, Ethan, because he asks her why, she says, I did what I felt was best for you.
Scared, she was stupid, she was young, like,
yeah, all of these dumb excuses. Yeah. And he says, no, you know what I think he's like, that makes sense for the first night, maybe the second night, a few days, but I think you decided to get back at the Cranes, like you said, at my expense. I think you did this to spite them. I think that you wanted your revenge and you used me to get it. It was rough. And she needed that though. She needed to hear it. She deserved to hear it. And Ethan deserved to say it. I'm glad that sometimes he makes sense. And he was absolutely right.
When he's not being repetitive and, you know, I don't want to compare him to Chad because Chad's obviously better than him, but sometimes he says something that's like insightful or, mm-hmm. you know, bring something to the table. And then I felt like the other like three out of these five episodes, he was just saying like the same thing over and over again about like, people are going to pay. I need to know who did this.
Yeah.
Who did
no, this was his one moment in all five episodes. This was his one, like, all right, Ethan is tolerable, beyond tolerable, likable in this moment. Yeah. But that's it. This is as far as it goes with him being palatable for me. So she says to him, I just want it for him to, what? She says, I wanted it for him. I don't know. Something about the Crane.
Probably like being a Crane and like that lifestyle.
Yeah.
Future that it would hold.
Yeah. And then they talk about the letter and how, and Ivy tells him, well, I had it, but then I gave it to Pilar for safekeeping and it was at her house.
Throw her under the bus for?
I mean, it's the truth. We all need to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah.
And it was at Pilar's house. You know, I wouldn't say it's thrown under the bus. Honestly, I would be putting Pilar under a little more scrutiny than anybody else is. Everybody's like, well, I know Pilar wouldn't do it. Well, Pilar's the only person who knows that beyond Teresa and Whitney.
She would be a suspect.
She'd be suspect number one, numero uno. The way y'all treat this lady, she'd be suspect number one.
Yeah.
For sure. But like you said, they're also narcissistic that they don't even consider how Pilar might possibly have some negative feelings towards them. Right. For the way that they treat her. But of course, Pilar did not do this, but she does know about it. She knows something. She has some information that she is keeping from them. and they feel like she couldn't possibly know anything about it. So they aren't even questioning her at all. They talk about the letter. Ethan finds out that it was at Pilar's house at some point. Of course, my immediate thought would be Luis found it, right? Luis hates me. Luis right. hates the Cranes. Luis would be a reasonable suspect. And he does kind of bring that up. He asks Teresa, like, I know this letter was at your house. Did your brother or one of your brothers ever see it? Why would you ask Teresa unless you have reason to believe that Teresa has seen the letter?
Right.
Right? Right? No.
I don't know why he never, like, first of all, she, even though she didn't do this, she looks so guilty all the time.
She hyperventilates. Her face
is guilt every second of the way.
She's hyperventilating the entire five episodes. Mm-hmm. Ethan, are you, did you, like, girl, calm
Sometimes
down.
People do things out of love. Sometimes people keep secrets because they care. Like, she's tattling on herself.
Seriously. And she should just say it. If it were me, this is a moment. This is a time when I would not play dumb. I would 100% say the truth about this and just let the chips fall where they may. Really. Also, Ethan's not worth it. So to me, you know, I'm different than Teresa, though. So I aspire to be as shameless as she is sometimes. Yeah. I feel like I would get further in life.
Confident. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel
Everything
like I would
get- you want is already yours.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel, I wish I had her powers of manifestation.
Yes.
Sometimes, but this is a moment where I would not do what she is doing. And a lot of times I agree with her methods. I really do. Like, I'm like, yeah, girl, that's the right move. Yes. Not this time. With Ethan being so upset and the fact it would be different if Chad and Whitney didn't know, but Chad and Whitney know.
So the many more people know.
The more people that know, the more likely you are to get caught anyway. And she doesn't know that Rebecca and Gwen know. But so there's five people that know outside of her that yeah. know about this. So she might as well just come clean because it's going to come out at some way. Yeah. And you want it to come out sooner rather than later. She should have just told him in the first place. I would have.
I know we talked about that last time.
Yeah.
That honestly, it probably would have been to her benefit to just tell him, because maybe if she would have been the one to bring it to him, right? Like, look, I found this. Do what you want with it. You can go and confront your mother. You could out this situation, or you could keep it to yourself.
Right.
If he would have brought it out, then maybe Gwen wouldn't have even wanted to be with him anymore.
Right. Exactly. Just tell the truth. But she didn't. She wanted to. To Teresa's credit, she really, really wanted to. She yeah. tried so many times.
And Pilar told her to keep quiet. And you know what Pilar does here? In the beginning, she's like, you better pray he never finds out. And then like 2 seconds later, she's like, you should tell him that you know.
Yes. She tells Teresa, and I have the same issue that you do, I think. She tells Teresa, you need to tell him the truth. You need to tell him the truth. But you were the main one telling me not to tell him in the yeah. first place. That you're the reason I'm in this situation. I wanted to tell him.
Yep.
You swore me to secrecy. And that's what, you know what? That's what Teresa should explain to Ethan. My yep. mother.
Throw her mom into the bus. Somebody has to. Everybody thinks she's an angel.
No. Pilar, nobody is. Pilar is not being held accountable the way that she should be for this. At all. Ivy is. He actually at one point, I forgot to say this in their conversation, he tells her, I don't hate you, but I don't know if I could ever love you again.
Yeah,
that was sad. Oh, dagger in the heart. That's rough. Yeah. I don't think my mama could ever do anything that where I would say something like that to her.
Yeah, that was a little rough.
You know,
I mean, you say things when you're angry too. So maybe, you know.
Yeah. I mean, if my mom kept my dad, like if I found out right now that my dad wasn't my dad and my mom knew this whole time, I would be very, very, very upset. But also it's way outside the realm of reality. My father and I are twins. But I still wouldn't be able to bring myself to be like, I don't know if I can love you. I don't love you. Cause I mean, we still have these 33 years of history and love between us. No, I could never.
Like, I love you. I don't like you right now.
Exactly. Exactly. That's how they should have written it. I didn't like what they said. I don't know if I could ever love you again. I didn't like that. Cause I did like what the amount of grace Ethan was showing to Ivy in the last few episodes, like the last week's episodes. And I don't know. That was a little rough for me, but anyway, let's very quickly talk about what's going on with Chad and Whitney.
Okay.
So, because we're about to pull these two stories together. We're about to merge all these stories together. So, Whitney and Chad go home after this party, and I guess Whitney couldn't sleep, and Chad's room is on the other side of her room, so he could hear that she was up. So he comes knocking on her door late night, no parents at home. I mean, maybe TC is there. I don't know. I haven't seen him in a while, but TC's out in his shed. TC's out in his shed. Because he wasn't at the hospital.
Yeah, you know? I didn't realize it until you just brought it up. Where is he?
And you would think he would like be, and he probably is at the hospital. Like the last time I saw TC, he was at the hospital. But
coffee break, maybe.
Yeah, maybe he went to pray for Grace or something. But Chad comes knocking on Whitney's door in the middle of the night. And then Whitney is just being so annoying. Again, she was doing all right for a week or two, and she is so fucking annoying again. Chad comes in, and she's been saying this for like since the end of last week's episodes, where she was saying that, wow, what if something happens, something comes up in your past that breaks us apart? Like, I can't live like this, is what she says to him last week. That's what she said to him. And this week we kind of pick up that conversation.
She always relates whatever's going on in Teresa's life to her.
Yeah, right. Live your own life.
Yeah.
Live your own life.
Y'all aren't twins. Like, what's wrong with you?
You're nothing alike beyond your age and like height.
Literally.
I mean,
you're friends, but you're nothing alike.
Yeah. So she is, like you said, relating all of the things that happened to Teresa as if those things are going to happen between her and Chad. She says, I wanted to talk to you because I want to let you know that you and I are only friends. Like, I don't want you to think there's nothing else between us. We're only friends. And he's like, yeah, but we're like on the road to being more. And she's like, no, we're not on the road to being more.
And then she's going back to like, I need to focus on my tennis career. I need to be like a champion or whatever the hell she was saying. Cause then he was like, yeah, you're the champion of being flat out wrong. And I was like, yes.
Same. I was like, yeah, that's such a good line. She says all of that nonsense. Then she starts talking about, look at Teresa. She thought that all of her dreams were coming true and she had found her Prince Charming and they were going to live happily ever after. And tonight I realized, no man can just waltz into your life and make it magical. And I actually started to believe in the notion of that love conquers all. Which, when did you start to believe that? Because literally you have been so negative about Teresa and Ethan all the way through.
And like, just life in general, really.
Like, she wasn't even very excited for her when she showed her that she was engaged to Ethan. Like, she just has not been that supportive of it at all. Understandably so, for a good point, a good portion of it is like, yeah, Whitney was speaking sense to Teresa, but no, girl, you've been real negative about it the whole time. When did you start believing in the notion that love can conquer all? You didn't never believed that. You've never once said that. Not one time. So she says, yeah, I need to focus on my goals and I want to be a champion and yada, yada, yada. And then,
when is the last time this girl even played tennis?
I'm going to say it was, I remember about 20 episodes, 25 episodes ago, she was in a tennis tournament, and that was the first time I had seen her on the court in 300 episodes.
Like, girl, that's not your storyline anymore. Come on.
Right. Why are they still pushing this? I don't understand why they're still pushing this, that she's like a tennis star. And they never, we never see her playing tennis. No. Or practicing. Or, you know, there's no story. There's no story around it. There's never any story around it.
In the beginning, there was. She was like going, they talked about it. Now we're just mentioning it.
Every once in a while, we're just like, remember, this is part of Whitney's whole thing.
She's a tennis star. Don't forget.
She's a tennis star who never travels for tournaments or goes anywhere, but she's a star in Harmony whenever they have tennis tournaments here. Like, ridiculous. But Ethan calls and interrupts this conversation. And he says he needs help. He needs Chad's help making a list of the people who knew about this letter and didn't tell him about it. How is Chad supposed to help you with this?
Correct. Also, why are you asking the newest person in town to help you with this task? One of your country club friends you couldn't maybe call to come over? I don't know. Maybe even Gwen could have helped you with that list.
I mean, also, he still has access to like Crane security. You like use a private detective and figure this out.
And then he like asked him too, like, do you know anybody who could have done this? Like, he doesn't even know anybody. Right. He knows the five of you. That's it.
That's it. But Chad is like, gets off the phone, tells Whitney that he has to go over to the mansion. And he says, I got to tell Chad that Teresa knew. If he asks me, he says, I'm not going to say it outright, but if he asks me about it, I have to tell him the truth. And Chad is so good. I love Chad. And I know y'all don't hear me talking like this about many characters because I hate most of these people, but I fucking love Chad. What he says to Whitney is so right on the money. And also, I might add, the exact kind of advice Whitney would have been giving to Teresa.
100%.
He says he has to tell Ethan if Ethan asks. He has to tell him the truth because Ethan has been hurt enough by the people that he knows and loves in his life and been lied to enough by the people in his life. He says, I'm not going to be another one of those people. And then, because Whitney says, well, you're going to destroy their entire relationship. You're going to break up their happy relationship. I'm not going to let you do that. If you tell him, he's going to be so upset with Teresa. And Chad says, this should not break up their relationship. From what I've seen, they have a very strong bond and they are very much in love. And yes, it will be tough, but they can get through this, but it needs to come out. I love Chad. I love him. He says, and then he says, if this breaks them up, then maybe their love wasn't meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree.
And I even agree. Like, you know, at one point he says to her, like, you know how you could get me not to tell him? You tell him. And then I won't have to tell him.
He said, yes. He says that to Teresa.
Yeah.
Yes. And he's absolutely right. So he goes over to the Crane Mansion, whoever this girl is, Whitney. Whitney follows him over there. Whitney follows him over there, tries to keep him from telling Ethan. Like, she's just arguing with him the whole time. They're going back and forth. It really turns into a conversation about their relationship, but they're using Ethan and Teresa because Whitney says, you know, if you tell him, then you will never have a chance with me. I'm never going to talk to you again. Like, I'll never forgive you, basically. And he says to her, even if we're just going to be just friends, like you claim we're going to be, even if we're just going to be friends, you would drop me just because I said something you didn't like.
Right.
I just love Chad.
And he was like, well, then that's not good for me because I can't live like that. I have to worry if I do something you don't like, you're not going to talk to me anymore.
Yeah. You're just going to drop me.
Yeah.
He's so good.
True that.
And so he says, I'm not trying to break them up, but he says, Ethan doesn't have many people. It seems to me he doesn't have many people in his life who are willing to be honest with him and be a real friend to him, but I am going to be his real friend. And so he goes inside with every intention of like, if it happens, it happens. I don't think he was going to go out outright. Just, I'm not here to tell him that, but if it comes up,
he asked, I'm not going to lie.
Right. So Ethan and Teresa are upstairs. Well, actually, we actually really quickly need to talk about what happens when they come back from the hospital. Ethan and Teresa come back to the hospital. Gwen and Rebecca are just at this house. Go.
Why are you
home.
There?
I was yelling at my TV. Why are you here? Go home. Rebecca like went home, changed clothes, and came back.
Right. They're like drinking their alcohol. Like they're chilling.
Yes. Like you do not belong here. Get out. Now. But they get there.
And they're like, oh, sorry, your party was ruined.
Yeah, oh, they're so nasty. I can't stand them. So Ethan says he's just come back to pack up his things. He's like, I'm going to pack up. I'm leaving tonight. And Gwen's like, oh, well, you can stay at our place because we have plenty of room. And Rebecca's like, yes, you know, my home is like your second home already. And then Teresa's like, no, it's okay. Ethan's going to stay at my house. And Gwen says, oh, in your room, Teresa? Has he ever even slept over? There's a first time for everything, bitch. Like,
she's so nasty.
So nasty. And also, this is not the time for this.
Yeah. This exchange.
Rivalry between these
and
two.
And I would be like, women. Miss Girl, he slept with you and still chose me. So where's the joke here?
Boom, boom, boom. I ain't even busted open yet. And here he is, right here with me. So,
like joke's on you.
Teresa's just too nice to Gwen.
I know.
She really is. She's so nice to Gwen. And I guess that's sweet of her. That's very Christian of her. Pilar would be proud.
It doesn't last forever, though.
I know. But, you know, right now, and frankly, she's too nice to Gwen for far too long.
Yep.
She really is.
And that's, I think, where what steers both of them wrong both times. They both let each other stay too close around. Like if this is my, whatever, now it's Teresa's fiance and the ex-fiance is always hanging around. I'd be like, why is she here?
Why
she
is she
here anymore?
Exactly. I agree.
Too close. Mm-hmm. This was not an amicable situation. Why is she still here?
Listen, what's that Maya song, Case of the X?
Where yes.
said, like, yes. I don't remember how it goes. It was like, y'all don't have no kids. Like, you told me that she turned trick when y'all broke up in 96. What you gonna do when you can't say no? And I really have to show and I really need to know. And
yeah, you don't have any mutual friends.
Exactly.
Ethan, your only friend is Chad. We know this now. Like,
yes. A thousand times. Yes. All of this. I agree. Go home, Gwen. You're too close and you shouldn't be here. It's inappropriate. Deeply.
Literally.
So Ethan's like, if you all will excuse me, I have to go pack.
He's not like, staying with either of you, actually.
Yeah, he's like, I'm gonna make my own arrangements because I'm a grown man with a bank account, you know. So
for now anyway.
So don't worry about me. I'll take care of it. He goes up. Gwen says something really nasty to Teresa, like, looks like your wedding's not gonna be happening after all, or something like that.
Also, that would have been a hint to me. I would have been like, yeah, looks like it might not go off as expected. What do you have to do with that?
There are so many hints. There have been so, like, why did you throw me this engagement party 2 days after you tried to murder me?
Literally.
No, there's too many. That it's all so suspicious. The whole thing has been everything that Rebecca and Gwen have done has been super suspicious, and nobody is questioning them at all.
That's what drives me the most crazy is that no one questions them. No one, well, not a single
Ivy. Call. Ivy at one point at the hospital. This we didn't talk about this, but Pilar. She's talking to Pilar and trying to work out who could have done this, and. She's talking to Eve because she accuses Eve.
Yeah.
Which was hilarious because Eve was like, she accuses Eve of it, of doing this. And Eve was like, so you think that I gave this letter that I never even knew existed to the tabloids so that you could expose all of my secrets? No, right. I didn't do this. No, this was not me. So that you could follow through on your threats?
Who stands to gain something from this?
Exactly.
Who stands to gain something from this? Because to be honest, like if I, and that's why Teresa should have just went and told him, because what would she stand to gain from that getting out? Ruining her engagement party. Now, like if anybody thought she was a gold digger, like why would I want you to be poor right before I'm going to marry you? Like what would she stand to gain from it?
Exactly. However, we, you know, our logic holds up for a very long time up until like the end of these episodes because Ethan's an idiot, not us, because yeah. Ethan's a dum-dum, not us. But let's talk about when Chad and Whitney get there. So, yeah. So Chad and Whitney get to the mansion and meet Teresa and Ethan up in Ethan's room where Ethan's packing. Actually, before this, Ethan is like packing up his stuff and he starts like picking up his awards off of his mantle. And he's like, this means nothing. This like means breaking nothing. Shit. Yeah. Everything he sees with his name on it, he's like, this means nothing, and throws it away. And Teresa says, no, you know, this is like national lacrosse champion, Ethan Crane, you won this. And he's like, no, Ethan Crane won that. I'm not Ethan Crane. I don't know who I am. Like, did you play in the game or not?
Literally, just cross off the last name.
I can't stand him. He's so awful.
And also, I feel like he was like making a mess of everything. Like, if it's any, you know, she's like, I'm sure Julia wouldn't care if you took all this stuff. He's like, it's not mine to take. I don't want it. Well, then it's not yours to break either.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Ridiculous. He was making a mess. And so they're having this whole conversation before Chad and Whitney get there. And she tells him, you know, you are who you are. She's trying to explain to him the most simplest and basic of concepts, which is you physically won this award with whatever talent you had, regardless of what your name is. You, Ethan, your first name is Ethan, won this. You did that. That is a memory. You did that. Like, there's no taking it away from you. But he can't hear it. He won't listen. His whole identity crisis is just not it for me.
Yeah.
I don't like this. I don't love the way this is written. I get it to a certain extent. I just think they took it too far.
They just like drag things out for so long that if he would have said it a couple of times, you would have been like, I get it. But listening it to it for four episodes straight, you're like, I literally will rip my hair out if I have to hear him say the same thing.
Yeah, like I got it. I get the concept. I think it's dumb, but let's move on, please. But no, right. We're not moving on. Chadney gets there, and Ethan says, oh, Chad, I'm so glad you're here. I need you to help me make this list of people who might have known this about me. And
you got any ideas?
Didn't tell me. Whitney pulls Teresa out of the room very quickly and is like, just FYI, Chad is poised to tell Ethan the truth. I just want you to be aware and ready for what might happen here. And so Teresa goes back in the room and tries to get Chad's attention to get him to not say this thing to Ethan. And then, I think Ethan talks to Sheridan. So that's how we get to a point where Chad's about to tell Ethan that Teresa knew, but Sheridan calls to check on
Ethan. He's like, oh, pardon me.
And yes. And so then Chad goes and talks to Whitney and Teresa and tells Teresa, I have to tell him. But you could tell him before I do, and it would be much better coming from you. And that tells, and Teresa's like, you know what, you're right. And she goes back into the room, and she's ready to tell Ethan. She says, I know something about the letter. I know something I want to tell you about this letter. And she says, someone close to you knew about the letter. Someone you love. Someone who loves you and only wants the best for you. Ethan cuts her off as he does.
He perpetually is putting words in other people's mouths. Like, he can't help himself. He can't stop himself.
All the men on this show do this. I think Chad is the only person who hasn't done it a lot. But I think, like, TC is really bad about this. Sam's really bad about it. Ethan's really bad about it. Luis is like the worst offender, I think.
Yeah.
He's really bad. They all do this. All the men on this show do this.
Miguel and just, like, doesn't have a brain, so he really doesn't. Same.
Miguel doesn't have a brain, and also, well, no, you know what? Miguel does it to Kay. He doesn't do it to Charity, but he does it to Kay.
Yeah, true.
Because Charity has nothing to tell because she's fucking boring and doesn't do anything. But
yeah.
Kay always has something that she needs to get off her chest. Like, well, I did this thing, or, you know. Yeah. But he does talk over Kay a lot and puts words in her mouth.
Yeah.
Ethan, at this moment, cuts Teresa off entirely. When you're the one asking the question, you're the one who wants to know who knew about this letter. Let me finish what I have to say, because you already know as much as you know. Maybe I know more than what you know. Let me finish. No.
Quiet. Yeah.
He then says, he interrupts her over and over again. He says, he finally says, you're talking about Pilar, right? Pilar did this, and don't worry. He doesn't say I'm not mad. He says, I understand why she didn't tell me. In this moment, if he understands why Pilar didn't tell him, right, he should understand why Teresa didn't tell him.
Quickly.
Yeah. If he understands why Pilar didn't tell him, then he should understand why Teresa didn't tell him. Right? Right? But then he starts flipping the fuck out. He's like, he says, if you knew something, you would tell me, if you knew who tipped off the paper, right? Because he says that specific thing. See,
yeah,
we're playing this game of semantics.
Yeah.
Now,
it's where, one extreme or the other.
Right. Where Ethan says, I want to know who tipped off the paper. And then Teresa's like, well, I had nothing to do with that. Like, I have no clue who did that. But then Ethan also is like pissed about whoever knew about this,
right,
but didn't tell him. He says, because Teresa gives like this hypothetical case of maybe this person knew it, but tried to keep it a secret because they knew it would hurt you and hoped that it would never, ever get out. And Ethan says, even if the person was just careless with the information, they're still just as responsible as the person who tipped off the papers.
Right.
They're both responsible for taking my identity away from me, and they might as well have just shot me. Boy, stop. And
they're
then he goes,
dramatic.
And then he goes, whether it was malicious or careless, someone out there did something so terrible to me that I will hate them for as long as I live. And that's what stops Teresa in her tracks.
He always just like goes too far. He's so extreme,
yeah,
that it's just, she's like afraid to tell him then. And he's like going on this whole thing, like, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and like talking in like quotes and stuff. Like, please.
He's so annoying. But that's all I have. You got anything else to add?
I think that was it.
We had a little bit of Shuise this week, but they didn't do anything.
I mean, like, honestly, yeah. The only thing I've written about them, like, lovey-dovey stuff, right? Like,
yeah. I literally have no clue what the fuck they were even doing. They were just, like, out in the middle of the night in the freezing cold, sitting at, like, a picnic table, drinking hot cocoa. I don't know.
Why? Where did that grill come from to make chestnuts on? I was very confused by that.
She
came out with that cute lingerie when they went back to the
cabin. They're about to try and get it on again. They've been trying to get it in for like weeks, yeah, and they just keep getting interrupted. So that's the show. I think that's it. We did it again. Woo!
Oh wait, did we ever say that Grace was alive?
Yeah, Grace is alive. She comes back. I think I said it, but in case I didn't,
Grace, in case you were nervous,
Grace is alive. Grace is alive. She's still a wet.
Oh, yeah, because we said that she called Kay and stuff. You're right.
Yeah. But all right. So Gina, let everybody know where they can find you one more time.
There G goes on TikTok.
And that'll be linked in the description. Thank you all for listening. You can always find me on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just search Passions Podcast and it'll pop right up because the @ is different on every single one now. So also feel free to send an email, passionspodcast@gmail.com. Check out the Patreon. Check out the website. I think there's new merch coming out soon. So check that out. And that's it. Remember, you are my passion for life.